Standing on the top of the sweeping hill, Sec Chief Stephen Sterling of Tucsonville scowled deeply at the grassy vista spreading to the horizon. In every direction, there was nothing but endless fields of waving grass. To the west, purple mountains rose into the cloudy sky. To the north were several copses, and that was it. In spite of the lush green plants, the landscape was as barren as the Great Salt. There were no ruins or vills or blaster craters or anything. If Ryan and his people had ridden this way, there was no way of knowing.
You blasting hell. Lost. I thought you were supposed to be the best tracker in the whole vill, Taylor.
I am, sir.
Taylor poured some water from a canteen into his palm. Holding the hand out to his horse, he let the animal slurp the water, being careful that his fingers didn't get in the way. Many a green rider offered a carrot to their horse, only to start screaming as they drew back a bloody stump. When the stallion was done, Taylor poured in some more. The ride had been long and dusty, and the animal was thirsty. So was he, but a good rider took care of his mount first. Taylor mentally recited an ancient poem. Inside the vill, it was plaster and brass, but outside the walls, a horse saved your ass. Learning that had been Taylor's first lesson as a Sec man, and never forgotten. His second lesson had been to not turn his back on a wounded enemy, even if his guts were on the ground alongside him. Taylor flinched from the memory. He still walked with a slight limp in the winter, caused by the lead mini-ball lodged near his hip, fired from the hidden blaster of a dying Mercy. Taylor gave the animal one more palmful. A short, wiry man with thinning hair, Taylor had a lopsided grin that never went away, even when he was killing a cold heart or a slaver. A remade Remington 30-06 bolt-action rode in a leather holster along the side of the animal, and the saddlebags bulged with supplies, most of them homemade pipe bombs.
Well then, which way did they go?
Sterling's own horse was similarly equipped with blasters and bombs. The zone was a dangerous place, and with only 5 Sec men, Sterling wanted all the edge he could get. The pipe bombs were a very recent addition to the Tucsonville Armory. J.B. Dix had taught them the secret of making something called gun cotton, which turned out to be 10 times more powerful than plas.
There isn't much that I can do on solid rock. We lost Ryan back on that stony plain near the desert, and no amount of yelling is going to make their hoofprints reappear.
Distant thunder rumbled in the cloudy sky, and the Sec men sniffed hard for any trace of chems in the air. But the wind remained clear and crisp, without any trace of acid rain.
What do we try next, Chief?
Chang tied back his long hair with a strip of rawhide. The Sec man was dressed in loose tan clothing suitable for travel in the desert. A bandolier of ammo pouches was draped across his chest, and a big bore long blaster hung off one shoulder. A crossbow jutted from one of the saddlebags on his horse, along with tufts of straw used as cushioning to protect the delicate glass bottles of a half dozen Molotovs. Chang was a Sec lieutenant in Tucsonville, and was Sterling's second in command. He was one of the best shots in the Ville with a BAR long blaster, and this part of the zone in New Mex had way too many muties, in his opinion. The place must have been hit double hard during Skydark to yield such a bumper crop of the cursed things. At least no one was making more of them, he thought to himself.
We could go back and try to find their trail again.
Tall and lean, Nathan Carstairs was carrying an old M16 rapid fire, equipped with a wooden handle to operate the bolt action. The black powder brass didn't have the power to operate the rapid fire, but the military weapon still served just fine as a single shot. Carstairs had proven himself worthy of being a part of the group when he had fought alongside Sterling and Baron O'Connor during the siege against the Sticky Nest in Tucson. He was lucky enough to survive that slaughter and become third in command after Chang. He could also throw a pipe bomb farther and straighter than anybody Sterling had ever seen. The long blaster was there just to give the Sec man some measure of protection in case something attacked closer than the bombs could be used.
That's a lot of ground to cover. But I suppose we got her, so what the fuck, eh?
Gil McGillian was the former driver of the Metro, the flame wag Tucsonville used to burn the streets of the pre-dark ruins around the ville clean of muties. But the Sec man had relinquished that vaunted position of honor to come along with Sterling. Gil was carrying a double-barreled scattergun, his shirt lined with cloth loops stuffed with 12-gauge cartridges for the weapon. They were reloads packed with rocks, glass, and nails, but still deadly. Sitting slumped on his horse, Tall Porter didn't join the conversation, but merely watched the others through half-closed eyes. The man looked like he was falling asleep, but that was just his way of keeping folks from seeing exactly what he was paying close attention to at any moment. During the fight with the Stickies, Porter had been slow to respond. Baron O'Connor had publicly ridiculed Taw for the matter, but then incredibly offered the segment a chance to clear his reputation by going along on this journey. That seemed fair enough. But as a further punishment, the Baron had decreed that Porter was to be armed with only a crossbow.
Well, no sign of any campfires that I can see. Sure would have been nice of Ryan to light us a beacon.
Maybe there are too many muties around. Stickies love fire.
Ain't that the nuking truth? No, I think he's far away from here. Hell, we could be out of the zone for all I know.
Porter brushed a fly off his neck.
Fine by me. Let's go back home. How can anybody feel safe without a stone wall around their ass?
Everyone ignored him.
Chief, if Ryan is a good day ahead of us, then we may never find him.
Yeah, I know. That just means we have to ride faster.
Ride faster in which direction?
Give me a second. I'm working on it.
Chang squinted at the horizon.
Does anybody else think that there's something wrong here? I mean, this field. This place feels odd. I can sense something wrong with it in my bones.
Odd place. I have to agree. Although I can't tell you why. Maybe we're just used to having sand under our boots.
Rather than grass under our ass?
The Sekmen all found that amusing, but Sterling felt his frown deepen. He had been thinking the same thing about this grassy knoll. Something was wrong here. Something unnatural. Then it hit him. No insects. With all this green, there wasn't a single insect making noise in the field. That wasn't a good sign. Hurriedly glancing around, Sterling saw a clump of tall grass and headed that way. Please let it be empty, he hoped. Although it couldn't be seen from the top of the hillock, there was a body hidden among the grass. Or rather, what was left of one. The skeleton had been picked clean, the white bones still covered with straps of tattered clothing. With a sense of growing unease, Sterling studied the cloth until spotting numerous tiny holes in the material. Glancing at the boots, he saw the same thing. Holes neatly punched through the leather, including the wooden soles.
Oh, hell!
Drinker!
Sterling pulled his hand blaster and fired randomly at the ground. There was no point in being quiet now. If this was Drinker territory, the underground muti already knew they were there. Rallying at the cry, the other Sekmen started peppering the soil with blaster fire. While Carstairs pulled out a pipe bomb and a cherished butane lighter, holding them tight, he nervously looked around, watching the soil for any suspicious movements. Sterling backed away from the skeleton.
Get on the horses! We ride north until reaching solid rock, and then...
That was as far as he got. When a section of grassland exploded into a wiggling pile of pale green tentacles that shot into the air and lashed about, searching for food. Human food.
Fuck me!
Gil fired both barrels of his scattergun. The double charge blew off one of the thrashing limbs, but as the tentacle hit the ground, it continued to flop wildly, and there was no sign of blood on the ragged end, only a thin greenish fluid resembling watery sap. Flicking a butane lighter alive, Chang lit an oily rag fuse and threw a Molotov at the underground creature. The bottle hit, and flames erupted at that spot. As the fire grew, the plant quickly withdrew, but reappeared a few yards farther away. Sterling spotted another set of waving tentacles.
Fuck me, there's two of them!
Dodging around the thick grass, Sterling tried to stay in the open field. The lush areas of growth were caused by the rotting corpses of the Drinker's victims. The greenery marked the lair of the muti plant, even as it served to hide the old bones from casual sight. A mixed blessing, then, and the sect chief cursed himself as the son of a fee for not spotting it sooner. That's why there were no tracks in the field. No animal or muti would come this way. Even warwags avoided Drinkers. By now, the rest of the sectmen were firing blasters at the ground or tossing bombs. The night shook with the explosions, and the two Drinkers attacked the empty air around each strike, but not the blast hole itself. It was almost as if the Drinkers understood that the bombs were being thrown. Were the plants getting smarter, too? Sterling raged as he zigzagged across the ground. First the Stickies of Tucsonville, and now this shit. Holding onto the Sec Chief's horse, Gil was waving around the scatter gun, with two spare shells sticking out of his mouth for faster loading. The others were spreading out, trying to confuse the mutie, firing blasters at anything that moved. The light from the Molotovs helped them to see the deadly tentacles tunneling below the surface. A flailing limb whipped across Chang's face, leaving a score of deep scratches from the thorny tip. That was too damn close, Sterling realized, trying to catch his breath while perched on top of a rock. Then he scowled darkly at Porter. The coward was just sitting on his horse and doing nothing. Not a fucking thing to help. To hell with the Baron's orders. He was going to personally kill the yellow bastard as soon as they get out of this field alive. But then the Sec Chief saw the problem. The horse had too many legs. There were six, not just four. And they weren't extra legs. They were tentacles going straight up from the ground and into the belly of the beast. Sitting astride the animal, Tall Porter was sitting absolutely still and was even more pale than usual. Then Sterling saw the man's clothing start to move as hundreds of tiny vines crawled out of the Sec man's body. One came out of his mouth to test the air, only to retreat again. Shooting from the hip, Sterling blew off the back of the Sec man's head just to make sure the man was actually dead. Pink and greenish fluids exploded out of smashed skull. Then his hair came alive as tiny vines writhed from the ghastly wound and exited from his mouth, nose, and ears. Only the dead eyes stayed intact to stare calmly into the starry heavens. Suddenly, Chang's horse screamed as a tentacle attacked, the curved thorns sinking deep into its legs. Then the vine began to pulsate as it started pumping out the rich red blood. Waving his Browning long blaster, Chang could only try to stay in the saddle. The angle made it impossible for him to get a shot at the subterranean monster.
Crossfire!
Working the bolt on his M16, Carstairs chambered around and fired. The tentacle jerked from the arrival of the 5.56mm hardball round, blood and sap gushing from the hole. Instantly, the tentacle released the horse's leg and slid underground. But as Carstairs worked the bolt to chamber a fresh round, the used brass popped out and hit the soil. A split second later, several tentacles exploded upward from that point, lashing madly with their deadly thorn-tipped vines. Gil put both barrels of the scatter gun into the monstrous thing, the wide spray of pellets doing the job proper, but also catching Carstairs' horse in the rump. The startled animal reared onto its hind legs, and Carstairs had to drop the M16 to grab the reins and stay in the saddle. Deciding this was his best chance, Sterling bolted from the rock and raced across the flat ground, expecting to be killed at every step. The Sec Chief tightened his grip on his blaster as he crossed 1 yard, two, three. As his horse came into range, Sterling bodily threw himself across the saddle.
Yeah!
Gil kicked his own mount into motion and dragged Sterling's horse along by the reins. Struggling clumsily, the Sec Chief grabbed the pommel with both hands and hauled himself upright to sit astride the saddle and take back the reins.
Motherfucker! Gotta move faster than that, you mutie bastard, the Ace of Tucson, man!
But a split second later, the ground around their former location started to move with vines and tentacles. As the questing limbs found nothing, the creature seemed to vent its frustration.
If you're mad at us now, try this!
Chang flipped a pipe bomb at the thing.
Scatter!
Sterling kicked his horse into a full gallop. The animal responded with adrenaline-fueled speed. The Sec man did as ordered and broke ranks to take off in different directions. A few heartbeats later, the bomb detonated, blowing a geyser of flame and vines into the air. But then, from the charred pit arose something. Only half seen in the cloudy night, it was huge, with a lumpy skin that was constantly twitching. And it seemed to be looking around for its victims.
Black dust, food, and shit! We got a drinker out of its burrow! We're in for it now, amigos!
Shut up and move!
Sterling pulled a blaster from his holster. The others obeyed the Sec Chief's signal to converge upon Sterling while still moving at a gallop. Dimly lit by the dying flames of the Molotovs, the drinker was starting to crawl after the fleeing Sec force. As it advanced, more and more of the animal-like plant came out of the smoking hole in the ground, oddly resembling a worm pulled out of its moist burrow. As it exited, the other drinker retreated. Then the end came out of the ground, looking exactly like the front.
Son of a bitch! There isn't two of them! Just one bigger! How large do these bragging bastards get?
Taylor frantically reloaded his Remington.
I say we keep running and don't find out!
punched low in the saddle, Sterling wanted to agree, but he could see white foam on the mouth of Cheng's horse. The wounded animal was doing its best, but would soon collapse and leave the man behind to feed the giant mutie.
Bomb count!
10!
6!
9! 4!
Use one each! No! 2!
Sterling cast a quick glance behind. The drinker was completely out of its hold and still coming. It was as if the inside of a dark tunnel had come to life. The triple damn thing was larger than the metro, Sterling thought.
Okay, we'll take this thing the way we did that pack of wolves at Dead Man's Gulch. Now follow me!
The others spread out behind the chief like a flock of birds racing from an aerial predator. Retracing their route, Sterling slowed his mount as they reached a shallow ravine. Easing his horse over the edge and down the clay bank, Sterling sprinted across the small stream to hastily scramble up the other side again. Reaching the top, the sec chief forced his panting animal to halt and pulled out a pipe bomb and a knife. Cutting the fuse to a short length, Sterling impatiently waited for the others to join in, just as the drinker arrived. Black dust it was big. As the other sec men galloped across the ravine, the drinker was close behind and almost stretched itself over the gully like some monstrous bridge. Then, down it went, the tentacles and vines lashing and whipping madly about in every direction.
Light it up!
Sterling dropped the knife to grab his butane lighter to start the fuse. The moment it caught, he flipped the bomb over the edge into the ravine. The lead pipe hit the water, closely followed by four more bombs. Slowly rising upward, the drinker lifted its inhuman face above the rim and looked directly at the tiny Norms with a face crawling with vines and roots. The eyes were strangely human, full of rage and hatred. With their hearts pounding, the sec men threw another salvo of bombs and molotovs just as the first charges detonated. The whole landscape seemed to shake from the force of the multiple explosions in the ravine. As writhing flames rose along its side, the drinker raised both eyes to the stars and keened in pain. A volcano of muddy water and tentacles flew into the air, shrapnel zinging everywhere, and the drinker bulged oddly, then seemed to come apart from the inside, gushing viscous fluids from every orifice. Knowing what to expect, the sec men raced for cover as the grisly debris rained down. As the reverberations died away, the drinker collapsed onto the clay bank of the shallow ravine, its split head only inches from the grass. Sliding off his horse, Sterling passed the reins to Chang. Drawing his revolver, the sec chief warily proceeded to the crumbling edge of the smoke-filled ravine. There was only churning water below, mixed with bloody debris. A thorny tentacle lay twitching on a small boulder, and a single great eye rested in the shallow creek, staring up at eternity in soulful reproach.